guess, do you want to just maybe give me a little bit of your background, like childhood, where you grew up, when you were born, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Well, actually, I was fortunate. I grew up for my 18 years in Junction City, Oregon. It's a small farming community 15 miles from Eugene. So I'm 15 miles from the University of Oregon. Actually, only 25 miles from Oregon State University. So right in between those two. But it was one of those situations where I went to school with the same kids for 12, 13 years. You know, when you look at kindergarten all the way through high school, and then it wasn't a lot of turnover. So yeah, I knew all the kids. It was a small high school. We had 450 in three grades. And so you did know pretty much everybody. It was fun. I always thought that that's the kind of environment I'd like to raise a family in, a small school, very community oriented, things like that, but didn't work that way, did it?
Apparently not.
So after high school, I started college at Washington State University. I walked on in their basketball program there, and I chose Washington State because I knew they allowed walk-ons. They gave everybody an equal chance. And back in those days, there was a freshman team. Freshmen could not play at the varsity level. So we had our own freshman team. I would say when we started tryouts, I was probably somewhere between 15th and 20th man. And by the time they really didn't make cuts, I don't think, because we kept 25 to 30 guys around. It's just a matter of when they weren't playing, they kind of fizzled out. But by the time we started playing games, I was our sixth man. And three, four games into the season, I got into the starting spot and never gave it up. Ended up being second leading scorer and rebounder on the freshman team there. We were 20-2. We had a very good team. It was a lot of fun because not like we had stars, we played really well together. It was a good team. So then the next year at Washington State, we had a coaching change. Actually, the assistant at the time at Washington State was Judd Heathcote, who took the head job at the University of Montana. The head coach was Marv Harshman. And in July of that summer, between my freshman and sophomore year, he took the head job at the University of Washington. So here Washington State is looking for a head basketball coach in August, which is not an ideal time to try to find a head basketball coach. And they brought in head coach, and he brought in three new assistants. And we had tryouts starting October 15th. We practiced for 2 days, and they cut from 29 guys down to 12. And actually, I forgot to mention, partway through my freshman year at Washington State, I got put on a full ride. So that was kind of nice. And so I'm on a full ride my sophomore year there, and I was one of the 17 that got cut after 2 days. And I didn't think that was very fair or anything, but actually the guy that was the sixth man on the varsity the year before as a sophomore also got cut. And it was just a bad deal. And that's where I'm able to, I think, empathize a little bit with kids. When I did do the coaching, you know, it's very difficult to cut kids. But, I was cut. I know what it feels like. It's not good. But you have to go on with your life. And so after a week or two, I contacted, Heathcote here at Montana. And in January of that year, I transferred over to Montana. I was here for 3.5 years to finish my college career. And got to play basketball for almost 3 years of it. And it was a lot of fun. Got a degree in math education, and there we went. So if I keep going after that, I graduated the University of Montana in the summer or spring of 75. We moved out to Oregon and went back to the home state, about 75 miles from where we grew up, in a small town. That town had 200 kids in the high school, four grades. I was the math department. I taught all the different levels of math. I taught all the math. I was also an assistant football coach. I was a JV basketball coach. I was a head baseball coach. It was a very busy year. It's a lot of fun, but it was very busy. I mean, I had 5 different preps to teach and coach the year round. But it was fun. Enjoyed it. I don't think we were going to stay there, but then in middle of April, that first year there, in fact, one of my students asked me if I'd heard that my ex-basketball coach here at Montana had gotten the head job at Michigan State. And I hadn't, so I went home that evening, gave him a call, and mentioned to him that if he needed any help, if he needed a, you know, a graduate assistant or anything, give me a call, I'd go with him. And so I did. He needed needed somebody there that knew a little bit about his program and his style. And I went to Michigan State, and I was a grad assistant. And I got to coach the JV team. They were now freshmen, were now eligible, so we had a JV team instead of a freshman team. So I coached the JVs. I went to the varsity practices. I helped recruit locally. Two of the big names of recruits at that time, my wife and I, we got to go watch Jay Vincent play quite a few times. He was a senior at Lansing. I can't remember which high school it was in Lansing, but he was a senior there. And, you know, he ended up playing in the NBA, and we did get him at Michigan State. But the guy almost everybody's heard of was Magic Johnson. He was a senior in high school. He was at Eastern High School in Lansing. Got to go watch him play a couple of times. Most of the time I'd be over with Vincent, the head coach, would be over at watching Magic play. But, you know, it was a great experience. Got to know him. We were planning on being there for 2 years. But it was really interesting because at the end of that basketball season, when my wife and I would go for walks, and by that time we'd had twin daughters that were born back in Lansing in the 1st of March there, we'd go for walks and they'd say, okay, a year from now, if there's one place, where would you like to go? And we really enjoyed Missoula. We liked it here. We enjoyed our time here. And I had student taught at Hellgate High School when I did my undergraduate work at the university. And so I always was partial to Hellgate, and it was always kind of the underdog, you know, the poor kids, the poor uniforms, all this and that. Sentinel was always the rich kids and the uppity, you know, they had everything going their way. So I always preferred Hellgate, the underdog. And so we talked, if a year from now, if we can go back to Missoula or something. Well, about 2 weeks later, the Hellgate boys basketball job opened up. And I wasn't planning on leaving after 1 year at Michigan State. So what I did, I went and talked to my advisor and found out that I could finish my master's that summer if I would actually pick up another class in the spring, take a full load in both summer sessions, I could get my master's. So we did that. I applied for the Hellgate basketball job. They had a math opening, and heck, everything worked out great. We ended up coming here in the fall of 77 and been here ever since.
Where was the little town in Oregon that you moved to?
Sheridan.
Sheridan?
Yeah.
Okay.
They had the federal penitentiaries there now. It wasn't when we were there, but it was what we called it. And the reason we probably, you know, I told you I liked the small communities and everything. We called that kind of a stagnant community. Kids either grew up, went off to college, and never came back, or they graduated from high school and stayed in the community and married each other and were there for the rest of their lives. It wasn't like there was industry and stuff that would bring people in and out. And so it was really interesting. The longer you're there, oh yeah, we're related to those people, you know. You'd be around some of the seniors, oh, I can't wait to get out of here. I'll never come back. And so, yeah, it was a small little town.
Cool. Going back to high school a little bit, I take it you played basketball. Did you do anything else? Sports, clubs?
Yeah, it was a small high school, and I was, as a freshman, in the junior high then, I was, you know, our starting quarterback and point guard and everything. But so my sophomore year in football, I played like 2 games and then broke my shoulder, broke what's called the growth plate on it, And that was the 1st of October, and I didn't get to start playing basketball until 1st of January. And so I missed the first 6 weeks of the season, and I didn't like that. Didn't like that at all. So I never played football again. But so I was a basketball, and I did play baseball. So yeah, it was one of those where you just, whatever season it was kind of what, you know, the favorite sport. But I always favored basketball. It was always my most enjoyable one to play. And so yeah, I was on the varsity as a sophomore, and then started my junior and senior years. Had fun.
Did you ever win a title or anything?
Well, no. This is my junior and senior years. We were moved up to the big school classification. It was one of those, when I said we had 450 in my high school for three grades. Well, back then Oregon used four grades to count. And it was 600 in four grades to put you up in the big schools. We had 602 or 603 for a couple of years. So we got bumped up with all the big schools, the biggest schools in the state. And like I say, we played, you know, we were right out of Eugene, so we played all the Eugene schools and a couple in Springfield. And, you know, most of the schools we played had enrollments of, you know, somewhere between 1,200 and 1,600. They were all at least double our size. And my junior year might have been one of the best basketball teams we ever had at Junction City. Because we finished third with the big schools. The top two went to state. And the two teams that beat us out both had, you know, one had a 6'9 post player that went and started at Oregon State for 3 years, and the other team had a 6'8 post player that we just couldn't match up to very well, and they're pretty good. So those two teams went and we didn't, but we beat everybody else in the conference. And we lost to the 6'9 kid, we lost to them by a couple at our place and by one at their place. And then we lost the other school in overtime once, and then the second time they destroyed us. But yeah, I mean, we had success, but we never made a state tournament. And the ironic thing was the state tournament was played in Portland, the Memorial Coliseum. So I never got to play there. That was always my dream. Well, then you turn around, and my senior year at the University of Montana, we won the Big Sky Conference. So we played in the NCAA tournament, and our first round was over in Pullman, Washington. We won there. Then we got to go to Portland, Oregon. I finally played. I finished my career at Memorial Coliseum. That was kind of special.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. Did you ever aspire to be anything other than a basketball player, teacher? When you were a kid?
Well, yeah, actually I did. When I first started college, I was going to go the accounting route, just accounting, and it was actually when I was at Washington State. I took, you know, some of the basic classes, but after I got cut, and then I had a little bit of chance, I remember I went back at Christmas time, back to my hometown. I actually watched my younger brother play a little bit of high school basketball, and I was really disappointed looking at the coaching and stuff and thinking, you know, it's not fair to those kids that, you know, they don't have, you know, somebody that's really passionate about coaching and everything. And at that point, that's when I kind of changed my mind and got out of the business world and went toward the education. So, but yeah, I've always said I could never be a coach without teaching. And I didn't think I'd ever teach without coaching. I wouldn't have if I started that way, you know. But after 25 years at the boys' job and when having a chance to watch my two children play college basketball, that's the reason I got out of the coaching. But, you know, I was never one of those that, you know, I'm a coach first and a teacher second. Or I always enjoyed the teaching, and the coaching was just a fun addition. But I don't think I would have just been a teacher. Mm-hmm. To make special relationships in coaching.
Yeah. Let's see. I just kind of have a rundown of
that's fine.
Stuff. So you said you majored in math education?
Mm-hmm.
Was that your only major? Did you have a minor?
I did not have a minor. If I wasn't going to teach high school math, I wasn't going to teach. Yeah, I had no desire to, I didn't want to be a PE teacher. And I really hadn't thought of it much, but one of my good friends, actually is from Washington State, was a basketball player and a PE major. And he told me he went out and taught for about 2 years, and he said, I couldn't do it. He said, I'm in the gym all day with all those kids, then you turn around and you go to practice in the same place. He says, I'd never even thought of it, and I hadn't either. I mean, it's different. He says, you're coming from a classroom and you're going into a special place. He says, you know, I'm in the gym all day and now I gotta go back and practice. And so, yeah, he didn't teach very long. Wow. Did some college coaching, but he didn't teach very long.
And you always wanted to do high school? You didn't want to do college or grade school or anything?
No, I had the opportunity. I mean, when I went back to Michigan State, I had the opportunity, if I wanted to, I could have stayed at the college level. But to me, watching college coaches, either the head coach or the assistants, and seeing the lifestyle they had, I didn't want that kind of lifestyle. You're recruiting, you're on the road all the time, you know, you're worried about all the practices, and it's a year round. And you know, I want to be a husband, I want to be a father. Those things were very important to me. So I didn't think you could do that at the college level. Now, I'm sure some have been able to, but I would say the majority of those don't. It's really difficult to be at that level, time-wise, and have a family and be devoted to them. And so I figured, you know, high school coaching was nice because you didn't have to, you know, you just traveled a little bit during the season, but you weren't recruiting all the time. And, you know, you were gone just a couple hours a day for practice. And so it was a nice deal. I mean, you know, you look back and I think, well, now if I had stayed at Michigan State, where would I have ended up? I mean, cause that's a pretty big time job. And, you know, you look at Jed Heathcote and all the people he's had that have been assistants for him all over the country. I mean, we're talking some big time coaches out there. So he was successful and he got his assistants jobs. But no thanks. I've never wished that I had gone that route or anything. It's been fun.
Going back to family a little bit, you have six children?
Five. We had twin girls that were born in Lansing, Michigan with us in 77. Okay. And we had a son, Jeff, born here in 83. And then we had twin girls born in 2 years later in 85 here.
And what are all four of your girls' names?
Let's see, the older girls were Kelly and Christy, and the younger two were Molly and Mandy.
Okay. And what are they up to now?
Well, they're all over the country. That's why it was nice to get Jeff back here in Missoula, in the state. Kelly is a clinical psychologist at the University of Portland. Her twin, and she's the mother of one, and her twin, Christy, is a registered nurse, although she hasn't worked for the last year and a half. She had her third child a year and a half ago, and her husband got out of dentistry school, and he's now what's called an endodontist, root canal guy, and they live in St. Cloud, Minnesota, so she's a full-time mom. Molly is in her second year at grad school at Gonzaga. She's a women's grad assistant for Gonzaga, and she's majoring in athletic administration, so she doesn't know if she kind of would like to coach at the college level for a few years and then probably get into administration. And our youngest, Mandy, went to Raleigh, North Carolina 4.5 years ago. Who knows why, but she did. She just picked a spot and went. And she is just finishing her teaching degree. She's going to be a special ed teacher for the elementary age. So she's been a paraeducator back there for 4 years and liked it. And so she's got herself what she has to student teach this spring, and then she'll be hopefully employed there. And so we don't see Mandy coming back. Molly likes it around here, but you don't know about athletic administration. That's kind of limited. We could see Christy and her husband, because her husband's from Glasgow. So we could see them maybe coming back in the area at times. Who knows? But he makes so much money back there that they aren't going to make out here. And then Kelly and her husband, her husband's also from Kalispell, so there's a chance they might end up back this way, but chance nobody will either. So we just, like I say, we're happy to have Jeff around and see him all the time.
So how many grandchildren do you have then?
We have four.
Four, okay.
Three girls and a boy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And when did you and your wife get married?
In 1973. It was after my sophomore year of college. So it was rare, but we had two or three guys on our team married. But yeah, I was married my last 2 years of college basketball, and that was nice. We had an apartment over by St. Patrick's Hospital, and she went to the nursing school there. And he'd walk, I'd drive to the university, and it was good times.
Did she prefer Deb or Debbie? Or
Deb.
Deb?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I take it you met at the university here?
No, we were high school sweethearts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's from that small town in Oregon also. Oh. Yeah, we started dating latter part of my junior year of high school. She's 1 year behind me.
Okay.
And so when I went to Washington State, that was her senior year of high school, and then I went back to Washington State, and she went to Oregon State for a year, and then she got interested in nursing and found out there was a nursing school here in town, and she ended up coming here to finish, to get that.
So was she here before you were then?
No, actually, I got here a half a year before she did.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I got to know the area a little bit. And then, I mean, she was at the nursing school for one full year before we got married, so she got to know her classmates. And I mean, if you want to look at how times have changed, the nursing school there, I think they did have one male, but everybody else was female, so he was way off on his own somewhere. But I never did see her dorm room. Guys were never allowed up in the dorm area. If you wanted to see them, you could meet down in their little lobby. Their little social area, but I mean, there's always the Mother Teresa or whoever was there to watch what was going on. They had bed check every night. The lady would come around, open their door, and flash the light in there. So, yeah, if you look back, times have changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. So, in your college playing days, are there any of like, what are your most memorable moments or memorable teammates or anything like that?
Well, my most memorable moment was the night we played UCLA in the round of 16. I mean, you've played basketball, and you know that, every night's not the same from a player's standpoint. Some nights you make shots, other nights you don't. Some nights, you play good defense. But every basketball player at some point, whether it's in City League, intramurals, high school, college, somewhere, has the night of their life. Well, I just happened to have the night of my life on a national stage. The most points I had ever scored in a college game was 25. The most I'd ever scored in a high school game was 30. And here we get up against one of the top teams in the country, and I score 32 points. I made 13 out of 16 shots from the field, 6 out of 7 free throws. I took shots I'd never taken in my career that went in. Good thing they went in, but, it's just one of those, you just get to having that feeling. You're just in that zone. And that for me, I mean, it was on the national stage. It was such a huge deal. We didn't realize at the time, but I mean, to the people of, the University of Montana, the city of Missoula, and the state of Montana. The state of Montana was, I mean, back then that was big because it wasn't all the media hype and everything. And I mean, Montana State had never been there, and I mean, Montana had never been there. Didn't have all these, the football subdivision championships, all that stuff, so. It was a huge deal, and for us to play as well as we did, I mean, we only lost by 3, and then they went on and won the national championship, too, so. And, of course, that was John Wooden's last year. We didn't know it at the time, but, she put all those little things together. But if anywhere we go in the state of Montana, You know, if somebody finds out, you know, oh, this is Eric, he's, do you play basketball? You know, it doesn't matter where we're at. You know, my kids would just be like, you know, they got used to it. But, I mean, and again, just an example of that, a week and a half ago, we had some friends in from Billings. And they'd actually gone out to the Montana State football game. And so I dropped them off and I went and picked them up afterwards. And we were waiting. We had one of their friends from Bozeman or something we were waiting for. So we're there and he finally comes. And then his dad was with him. And, you know, so this family is introducing me to the, you know, this kid's dad. You're Eric Hayes, you're the basketball player. And I just kind of nudged the, you know, the family. I said, see what I mean? I mean, you know, because they're from Billings. And it doesn't matter where you're at. People remember that. It was a huge deal in this state, and it still is. People still talk about it.
Yeah, and you were recognized by getting inducted to the team was inducted to the Hall of Fame.
We got inducted, yeah. That was a neat deal a couple of weeks ago. That's the first time I'd seen most of them in 35 years. If they don't live in Missoula, I hadn't seen them since we graduated in 75. And that was a special deal. I'm glad we wore name tags because there's a couple I wouldn't recognize, but it was fun. We had a really good time, and before the weekend was over, we were making plans to do it again. Maybe do it in the summertime where we can, you know, take a float trip one day, play some golf another day, and just hang out. And just, we really, and that was what was, I mean, we had a good time as a team. We really got along well together, and it was fun to get together again. Yeah, it's pretty special.
How did it feel at the ceremony?
Well, I mean, it was very special. I think with myself being in the state and recognized for it all the time, it wasn't as meaningful as it was for some of the guys that, you know, wouldn't be recognized or the name wouldn't be recognized with that team. And for them to come back here and to see and how much, you know, the University of Montana appreciates them and what they did. And I mean, and Jim O'Day told this story at the induction thing, and I'd known it for a few years because I've gotten to know him over the years. But, you know, the athletic director out there, he told me that the only reason he's at the University of Montana is because of that game that night. He was a senior in high school in Cutbank, or Shelby, I can't remember, one of those two. Maybe it's Shelby. But he was over there, Cutbank, and ended up listening to the game on radio. And he was going to Montana State. Everybody went to Montana State on the eastern side of the divide. He'd never been to Missoula. Mm-hmm. He got so fired up listening to that game and excited about it. Next day, he went into his counselor at high school and said, hey, you know, give me some information on the University of Montana. He enrolled that fall, never been here, never been to Missoula before. And look where he's at now. He's a big-time Grizzly. But yeah, that's what he said. He said, that game, he said, if you guys had played poorly or if I hadn't listened to it or whatever, I would have never been to Missoula. Never be where he's at right now. So, changes a lot of lives.
Mm-hmm.
Might have changed Heathcote's life. I mean, who knows if he could have gotten a job at Michigan State without the good performance we'd had, you know, in round of 16. So,
how much of an influence was he on you, do you think?
Big. Very big. It's interesting because I was probably one of the few guys that could really play for him and not let him bother you. I mean, he still bothered me, but I mean, he'd yell and scream at you and holler at you for every little mistake. It was unbelievable how many mistakes you could make. And he would let you know it and you'd never forget it. And some guys couldn't take that. You know, it was a very harsh criticism. And some guys, you know, need to be patted on the back and everything. And it was one of those, for some reason, I was able to process. I, you know, he'd be yelling at me, he'd go in one ear, and partway through, if I believed what he was saying and understood, I would store it. If I didn't believe it, it'd just go out the other ear, but you'd always shake your head yes, like yes, 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 to, you never disagree. But there were some kids that you'd start yelling at them, and that was it. And they didn't become as good of players as they could. And so what I tried to do was, you know, I used the fact that I did do a lot of yelling, I don't know if that's good or bad. I look back on it, I wish I probably hadn't as much, but I guess it was a way to get things across at that time. But I don't feel I was ever overbearing to the point where I was destroying kids and not allowing them to perform up to their capabilities, or they're out there frightened because of, you know, what I would say. You know, I learned over time that, you know, it's okay to criticize, but, you know, give them a good pat on the rump or something on the way back out and say, hey, you know, you're playing well, keep working hard, something positive, because that's what they would remember. And you wanted them to be competitive, you want them to play hard. And so, I mean, a lot of Heathcote style I used, but it was, I tried to get a much better positive reinforcement.
Moving on to continue on coaching, what were your, I mean, I know that you won a few championships and stuff.
We did. We won 3.
Yeah.
Should have won some more probably, but.
I was just wondering if any of those teams really stood out to you, or any moments during your coaching career, kind of like your UCLA game.
Yeah, like the UCLA game. The one that stands out more than anything was, you know, maybe it's because of the outcome too, but our 93 team was very, very good. We didn't have much depth. We played during the season. We played, you know, 8 guys, and we got to the tournament. We cut down to 6, 7, and then actually the championship game, we played 5, and the 6th one played for maybe 2 minutes because one guy hit his head and had to come out for a couple minutes. So that group was by far, but they were the most talented group we ever had. It had a good blend of size and great guard play. We had 4 tremendous perimeter players, and one of them was good enough, he had to go in and play in around the post, but he was very crafty. So those 5 were very skilled. We went through the regular season undefeated. And, you know, we'd done that once before in 88, and we got in a state tournament. Well, actually, before that, it was the last weekend of the regular season. The Billings schools were coming over here to play, and Billings West was also undefeated. And at the time, one of the sportscasters here in town asked me about 2 or 3 weeks ahead of time. He said, do you want to play Billings West out at the field house? If I could get that arranged, would you want to go out there and play? I said, well, you know, talk it over with our athletic director. And all our athletic director said was, you know, can you guarantee us a certain revenue? Because, you know, when we play at our gym, we had pretty good crowds that year. It was an exciting group. We had over 60 dunks. We had 2 guys that could just go up and dunk at any time. And it was kind of fun. It wasn't what you experience in high school, at least in this state. And so the TV guy said, hey, we can guarantee you your gate and everything. So we ended up going out to the field house. It was on a Friday night. You know, the university teams were not in town. And we went out there and, you know, they pulled the bleachers out to start with. And I didn't realize it, but by the end of the first quarter, or before middle of the first quarter, all the seats were full. So they had to then open up the end zones. We had over 8,000 people at that game. It was unbelievable. A lot of people didn't get in at the start because the ticket takers, they weren't expecting anything like that out in front. And we ended up beating West by 12 or 13. Now, one of the most incredible play I've ever seen in high school was that night. And like I said, we had guys that could dunk and everything. We had a steal. It was right in front of our bench at midcourt in the second half. And we were up, you know, 6 or 8 at the time. And we got kid going on a breakaway, and Billings West kid's right there chasing him. He goes up, and instead of laying it in, passes it off the backboard to the next guy, and he dunks the thing. And I said, whoa. You know, you'd see it. Guys do that practice or something where there's nobody else around, but here the game's going on, close game. So that was and playing at the field house, that was an incredible experience. And then we ended up playing Billings West in the state championship game. We ended up winning in double overtime. So that was pretty memorable. I mean, just with the stage that was set. And
was that the 88 team or the 93?
That was the 93. 88, we were undefeated until the championship game. And that year we had a slew of good seniors, but we didn't have much size. We were, our biggest guy was 6'3". In fact, our 6'3 post player that started as a sophomore and a junior hardly played at all his senior year. He hurt his knee and then blew it out at the state tournament before we got to the championship game. And Bozeman at the time, they were really good too. They had one loss, and they had a 6'8 post kid, and they were able to slow the tempo down and keep it a half court, and they ended up beating us by 5 or 6, I think. So that one was really, it was frustrating, to, not frustrating, it was hard to lose that one. Just, I mean, Bozeman was good. It wasn't like it was a huge upset, but it was one of those where, you know, we had a chance to be undefeated, which hadn't been done since like 72 or 73. And so then when we did accomplish it in 93, it had been, I think it had been over 20 years since anybody at the big schools had been able to go undefeated. So those are, that was pretty special. But so most times we won championships, it was with what we call senior-laden teams. And next year we didn't have much, but that's okay. We're happy to have a good team. You know, at Hellgate, a smaller school, you're not going to have, you know, great classes year after year. You know, it's not like Billings West or CMR or Bozeman where they just reload every year. They've got enough seniors. You know, we usually had to have a, you know, somehow have a good, a really good class of players with maybe one or two juniors interspersed there to help us. But
so what years did you actually win? 93 and
93, 85, and 90. I'm trying to think of, yeah. We got beat in 82 and 88.
In the
and
championship?
In 2000. Yeah, we got beat in 2000.
So those were your runner-up years?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. And the 93 team, was that with J.R. Camel?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, he was as talented as an individual as I ever had a chance to coach. I mean, he was... He had such quick hands, and he was relentless. He worked hard defensively, and he had the, it's not like he was a great jumper, but he was. I mean, he did it effortlessly. He'd go up and he'd dunk, you know, 360s behind the heads, whatever you wanted, he'd do it.
Just without trying it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that spring, he high jumped 6'10". So, and triple jumped about 48 feet. So, yeah, he was a pretty good athlete.
You think he was probably the standout player of your coaching career?
Yeah. The only thing I was disappointed, we only had him for the 1 year. He transferred in his senior year. He came in from Ronan. And so, yeah, if we'd have had him for a couple of years, I think it would have been a really good fit. I mean, he would have, or if he'd have been there his junior year, we would have been pretty good that year, too, because he was that talented. But, you know, besides that, in 93, besides J.R., we had Ryan Dick, who was, you know, 6'6", 6'7", at the time, and went on and started for the university. You know, we had Tom Harrington, who was a very good perimeter player. Jordan Lynn, who was a very, very good point guard. We had Jake Dennehy, who's starting safety for the Grizzlies, you know, for 3 years. He was our 6'1 post player that, you know, was a better perimeter player, but he was very good inside.
So, he's, yeah, the crafty one.
Yeah, yeah, he very, and that was by fluke. Junior year state tournament, our big kid getting foul trouble, and he just steps in. He'd been playing the perimeter all year because we thought he's a perimeter player, and he goes in there and they couldn't stop him. So hey, I think we got him out of position. So yeah, his senior year we played him down there, and he was, and you know, we'd let him step out and play out on the wing too, but he was really good at the high post. So. Sometimes you learn things by accident.
Sure. Let's see. I don't want to take up too much of your time. In Judd Heathcote's book, he talks about you shooting free throws.
Mm-hmm.
How many did you make in a row?
Well, his book's not accurate, but I know what it is. It's 81.
81.
In fact, I did it twice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, both times when I was at Michigan State. In that 1 year, they're just a couple weeks apart. But, yeah, because I use that in my camp all the time, talk about it. I mean, it was one of those, free throws were important to him. And at the end of our practices, you know, he'd have to make so many, then you'd be able to leave. But he always said, you know, if you can make 25 in a row, he'd buy you a little soda. So my senior year, I'll bet you 2 or 3 nights a week I'd get a soda. You know, because I got to the point where I was a very good free throw shooter. Well, I was 7th in the country that year as a free throw shooter at 87-88%. And then, so I'm Michigan State, and he asked me to demonstrate once, and so I think made 81 in a row, and made him look good. So.
Is that, when you were coaching, was that kind of your emphasis on what's most important, or?
Well, no, but, you know, a free throw is repetition. You should be able to make free throws. You need to practice them, you need to get in a routine, and all those other things, and, yeah, if you could make free throws, that would limit you playing time late in the game if it was close. So, you know, yeah, we'd emphasize it, but we wouldn't spend a lot of time. You know, and I told players, you know, hey, if you can make you get 25 in a row, I'll get you a Powerade or whatever. I had to do that some, but not very often.
Kids are doing it more and more, do you think, or?
I'll bet you could go to Hellgate right now and we don't have anybody in that varsity that can make 25 in a row.
That's true.
Or anybody in the program for that matter. I mean, and a lot of them, they never practice it, or they never concentrate, or realize, you know. But, yeah, it's something to always talk about a little bit, and I try to tell kids, you know, especially in camp, that, hey, if you make 4 or 5 in a row, don't stop until you miss. You know, keep shooting, and that's one way you'll find out how many you can make and stuff. So, I can remember, it was her senior year in high school for my daughter, Molly. She had, yeah, rebound for me, so I sit there and tap him back. Molly, how many is it? Oh, it's got 40-something, I can't remember. She made 99.
In a row. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And I stood there, and I mean, I counted everyone after she told me where she was at. And since then, I mean, she went up to 135 at Idaho State, and then a couple of years ago, I can't remember what it is, it's over 150, might even be over 190.
Gosh.
You know, but yeah, she just gets in a little routine, just down there and shoot.
So, I thought 92 was good.
Yeah, I did too.
Wow. And you were drafted by the Bucks, right?
I was. Went back there, that was in June of 75, we had a rookie camp, and I look back, I mean, it was fun, it was a lot of work. It was 3 days of 2 practices a day, hard practices. I felt good, I was one of the 6, I think, they taught their offense to. The only problem I had was, right after they drafted me, they had Lew Alcindor or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, they traded him to the Lakers. And when they traded him, they got 3 rookies from the Lakers, plus another perimeter player from the Lakers. And so, you know, I'm there at their rookie camp, and they already have 4 rookies on no-cut contracts. So there wasn't much chance of anybody else making it. But I felt good enough where, they, you know, like I say, they taught me the offense. I had a chance to play with the good players. I just held my own with them. I felt good about my situation, but what was nice was I went there with the idea that, hey, if I didn't make it, I had a teaching job out in Oregon. I already had that all lined up. And, I mean, you talk to other players there and guys that were not very good. You know, if you think of a professional, oh, I got to make the team this year. I don't have anything else to do. And, oh, you better go find a job, buddy, because you're not going to make this team. And, yeah, you'd feel sorry for some of those guys. But, yeah, and back then the overseas was not like it is today. You know, there was not much of an overseas thing. And like I say, I had enjoyed my high school and my college career. I enjoyed basketball, but I wasn't going to go everywhere to try to make make it in the NBA or make it overseas or anything. I was content with what I had, and I had a teaching and coaching job, which is what I wanted to do.
So no other teams contacted you or anything?
No. Back then, I mean, there was only like, I don't know, I didn't think there were 20 teams back then. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, there was, you know, in fact, Heathcote told me, he said, you know, we could have got you overseas if you wanted, but I didn't want to do that. I was ready to become a teacher and a coach. I was looking forward to that.
Let's see. Oh, are you, what are you doing now? Because you retired from teaching.
I did retire last spring.
Last spring.
So I'm now in doing some financial investments, retirement planning stuff.
Okay.
It's fun. I've enjoyed it. The thing I haven't enjoyed is all the studying. You have to take all these national exams to be licensed and certified. And almost all of the questions and all the information does not pertain to what you're going to do in the job. Mm-hmm. Very little of it does. So I've been jumping through all these hoops since the middle of July. And I'm licensed now. I can do most things. There's a few things I can't do still. I have to pass another test if I want to do those. But so yeah, I'm just starting to get some clients and helping other people.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. It's an opportunity to help other people, and you know, it's like I tell people, you know, I don't need to do it financially. I'm okay for my teacher retirement and our retirement plan that we've done in the last 20 some years. We're in good shape, but need something to do, and it gives me an opportunity to go out and hopefully help some people. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I like doing is I'm working with people I know, people I like. Education, they gave you a class and said, here, teach. Mm-hmm. And you didn't always have kids that wanted to be there or didn't like what you're trying to teach. And it was hard, but this is something that was, hey, if I don't like the person, I'm not going to contact them. You know? So it's new, but it's a new chapter in my life, but it's exciting. I'm having fun.
How long, I mean, do you have a plan for how long you'd want to do that for?
I'd probably like to go another 10 years at least, you know, just to see. The nice thing is you set your own hours. If I want to go on vacation, although I can't right now because of basketball, so don't remind me of that, but, you know, because we at one time we talked about maybe going to Hawaii this January, take a week off of school and just, well, if I wasn't coaching basketball now, we could do that without any problem. Mm-hmm. You know, this fall, we went out to Oregon for a week in October. And I didn't have to worry about a substitute and what my students were doing or not doing. And it's nice. Yeah, so I don't think I'll get burnt out on work. Because I'll only work as much as I want. And, you know, it's not on the bell schedule.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice.
It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Anything aside from that that you're looking forward, like, it sounds like you want to go to Hawaii. Is that a goal?
Well, I don't know if it's a goal. I mean, we've been there once. I've been there 3 times. Okay. Actually, Deb went again 2 years ago with our daughter Molly when she graduated, and they went over for a week in January. But, yeah, it's a nice place to go in the wintertime. You know, when you're freezing cold here and everything, and it's not so crowded. But that, go see our grandkids and our kids, and yeah, we'll keep busy.
Yeah. Just looking to stay in Missoula, though? Not trying to move anywhere?
No, Missoula's an awful nice place. And, you know, you were away for a while, and it somehow brought you back at least for a while. It has a tendency to do that. It has a strong pull on people.
Being away definitely made me appreciate it a little more.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, when you're growing up here, you don't appreciate it at all.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's just all you knew. But when you go away, you know, wow, where are the mountains? Or where is the season? You know, the snow? Or just the people, the downtown, and all those things.
Yeah.
Pretty neat place. The outdoors.
Sure.
Yeah. You ride your bike up in the wilderness. You're there in 5 minutes. Hard to do out in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Oh, have you coached girls basketball too?
11 years of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I was an assistant. I was never the head coach.
Okay.
Which again was nice. You just show up for practice. And although 1 year, 3 years I was a sophomore girls coach, so I had to do my own practices.
Mm.
But the other 8 years, I was a JV coach, so you'd show up and the varsity coach would have the practice. And that wasn't bad.
Yeah.
I mean, one year I did the freshman too, so.
And, I mean, as far as similarities and differences go, obviously, like, guys are bigger and all that kind of stuff. But as the gameplay, how are they similar?
Have to compare. The girls would listen and try to do what you told them because they hadn't sat and listened to, you know, ESPN and Dick Vitale and everybody else tell them how to play. Whatever you told them, they believed. And they would really try to do that, and that's what we found refreshing. They didn't have the egos that the guys do and stuff, but you're also limited in what you can do. I can still remember when I was coaching, well, it was a JV girls team. I mean, we took a timeout with 3 seconds to go. We're down 1 or 2 points, so we have full court to go. So take a timeout, drop an inbounds play, and go out and try to run it. Well, didn't realize the girl couldn't throw the ball from out of bounds to midcourt, you know. So it kind of spoils your play that you had planned, you know. But those are just little things. But they're not going to say they can't do it. They're going to try to do what you tell them to do. And so, yeah, they're always fun to coach. It was really, they were very appreciative. And it was good.
Guys didn't listen too much, though.
Well, if you were the head coach, they did, because if they didn't listen to you, then they didn't play. But, again, they're still going to try to do it their way. That's where you just had to be strong-willed and, you know, sit a guy down. And I had a number of players that sat next to me a lot of times that didn't think they should be sitting there, but eventually they'd realize that I was the one that was going to determine how much they played. So if they wanted to fight me, they weren't going to play much. They wanted to, you know, accept what I was telling them and try to do it. Then they get back out there.
So, like, discipline to you is more important than talent?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, because I had some talented players that were not very disciplined, and they wouldn't play much.
Makes sense.
Yeah, well, it's a team game. Now, if you're going to go out and do your own thing, what are the other 4 guys supposed to do?
Yeah. Yeah, you got to love those selfish players.
Yep.
I think that's pretty much it. I think I've got it. Oh, when were you born? When is your birthday?
July 4th, 1952.
Okay. Really? So Independence Day, baby, huh?
I always celebrated my birthday. It was always special.
For everyone.
Well, yeah. And it was always a holiday. Never had to work. And, you know, I look at kids, well, all 5 of our children have birthdays during the school year, and you think, wow, you know, my day, I didn't even realize it until I was a father and stuff. That, you know, your birthday's supposed to be special. But boy, when you're in school all day or practice, and you might not be home but until 8 o'clock at night or something. Mm-hmm. I had the whole day. It was my day. It was pretty special. And I still enjoy it. It's still my day. Mm-hmm. So it was a good day. In fact, one of my granddaughters was born on July 4th. So we're birthday buddies.
That's pretty cool. My mom was born on July 3rd, actually.
So oh, really?
Pretty close.
She couldn't hang out, huh? Couldn't wait another day?
Apparently not. She wanted her own day. She didn't
want... Her mom didn't want to wait any longer.
Oh, did you go to grad school?
Michigan State.
Oh yeah. Okay, and you were the grad assistant. Mm-hmm. That was for 2 years.
I only stayed one.
Oh, you only stayed one.
Yeah, it was a 2-year program, but since the Hellgate job opened, I stayed one went that summer to get that taken care of. Yeah, I don't know what I would have done had I not been able to finish it that year, because we went there to get my master's, and it's not like the Hellgate job opens up very often. And so I don't know. If they would have told me at Michigan State, no, you can't get it, I don't know what we would have done. I probably stayed there and hoped for the best the next year, but and then our whole lives would have changed too. But
it's very true.
Yeah. So everything worked out. It's nice.
What kind of did you ski a lot or do it not at all ever?
All the way through high school, no. My dad was a basketball coach at times, and he never skied. My mom had never really skied much, and so as a family, we never did. And again, in Oregon, you're, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours away from any ski facility, so it's not like you're right out your back door. Mm-hmm. And then actually, after I got cut at Washington State, that Christmas vacation, I went skiing twice. I went, you know, Deb and I were together at the time, and she skied a lot, so she took me up to a place in Oregon. So I went twice then, and then when I was teaching in Sheridan, that 1 year I was there, we went one Sunday or something up to Mount Hood. Mm-hmm. And so I went skiing three times in my life. And then once I got back to Montana, never have skied. Never have skied. I've fished maybe two or three times in my life here, or not my life, but in Montana. Never hunted in my life anywhere. So you look at Montana, you got hunting, fishing, skiing. I do zip. But I do like it here.
Yeah. I don't do much of that either. Yeah. I've never hunted. Don't want to hunt. All right. I think I've used up enough of your time.
I was going to say, you'd be able to get enough for a paragraph.
At least.